Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today? Why? And what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
Colorado, Rocky Mountain High. I've seen it rain and fire in the sky. The shadow from the starlight is softer than a lullaby. Rocky Mountain High.
7 minutes after the hour of 5. And this song is played in honor of the Supreme Court Justice nominee that was put into play last night by President Trump, Neil Gorsuch, who is a Colorado boy. In fact, that's where his home is. That's where he sits on the appellate division. He raises horses, he's got chickens, roosters, the whole nine yards, wears cowboy boots, a cowboy hat, and would be the first westernized, and when I say that, from the west coast of the United States, the western part of the United States, Supreme Court judge, in a long, long time. And he was born Roman Catholic, went to a Jesuit high school, but attends Episcopalian services, so that means he has become a wannabe Catholic. So he's not really a holy roller. He's not an evangelical as he has been described, but oftentimes has taken positions that evangelicals support. This is what President Donald Trump had to say yesterday about his nominee.
Today I am keeping another promise to the American people by nominating Judge Neil Gorsuch of the United States Supreme Court to be of the United States Supreme Court.
On the line to discuss that right now is Jeffrey Stone, an American law professor and noted First Amendment scholar, currently the Edward H. Levy Distinguished Service Professor of Law at the University of Chicago Law. Thanks for jumping on the drive home at 5, Jeffrey.
My pleasure.
Okay, so just looking at this candidate from afar, he represents a Western value here in our country. We haven't seen many United States Supreme Court justices of late from that part of the country. It seems like academically he matches up to the job. What is your problem with him mustering up enough votes and actually sitting on the Supreme Court replacing Scalia?
Well, first of all, just as an aside, we have had quite a few justices from the West, including William Rehnquist and Anthony Kennedy and Sandra Day O'Connor, but that's neither here nor there. Gorsuch is a capable judge, a smart guy, very conservative. Had Antonin Scalia died now and had Donald Trump nominated Judge Gorsuch to replace him thereafter, my view would have been that he is a capable judge. There's no ethical issues I'm aware of with respect to his performance of his responsibilities. And even though he's very conservative, he'd be replacing another very conservative justice. And in the same way that I supported the confirmation of John Roberts when he was nominated to replace Chief Justice William Rehnquist, I suppose I would have supported the nomination of Judge Gorsuch. Even though he's not the kind of justice I think our nation needs. But that's not the situation we're dealing with. We're dealing with a situation in which Antonin Scalia died almost a year ago. President Obama nominated Chief Judge Merrick Garland to replace him. Judge Garland is eminently qualified, highly ethical, and relatively moderate jurist who should have been confirmed by the Senate easily and quickly, following the example of the 15 nominees who preceded him with anything remotely like his credentials and background. But the Republicans who controlled the Senate simply refused even to hold hearings on Garland. And they did that in order to create a situation that hopefully, from their perspective, a Republican would be elected president, and that Republican would then be able to appoint someone like a Judge Gorsuch. My view is that is a completely unconscionable behavior, unprecedented in American history, utterly manipulative of the responsibility of the Senate, and that it poses a really grave problem of legitimacy for the Supreme Court, for Judge Gorsuch, who's done nothing wrong. And I do think that the Democrats, because this manipulation has taken place, should do everything in their power to prevent this confirmation, and in the hope of finding a more moderate judge on which the Democrats and Republicans can agree, rather than pushing down the throats of the nation, another very right-wing justice who, as I say, I would have supported had circumstances
right,
been different.
But Jeffrey,
that's not the circumstances we have.
You do realize that some folks listening are going to say, oh, wait a second, the Republicans, if you're saying they were bad for filibustering Merrick Garland.
And they did not filibuster. They did not filibuster.
Well, they basically refused to meet with him, consider him. Yet if they did that, then Democrats should do the same thing. It's almost like it's a tit for a tat. So if the Republicans were wrong for doing that, why can't the Democrats take the high road?
Well, here's the problem. The Republicans had control of the Senate when the Garland nomination came forward, and therefore they simply refused even to consider the nomination. Now, the Republicans still have a smaller control, but control of the Senate, and the Democrats cannot do what the Republicans did because they don't have control of the Senate. What the Democrats can do is to filibuster, and to override a filibuster requires 60 votes, and the Republicans don't have 60 votes. But the Republicans can, using the rather bizarre mechanisms of the Senate, get rid of the filibuster in order to prevent the Democrats from blocking this confirmation. And this is part of a pattern of manipulation and disingenuity that is really dangerous to democracy. There are rules, there are traditions that have led the Senate to operate in a certain way over its history. And the Republicans are now violating those rules in order to attain political and ideological goals. That's a real danger to our democracy.
If I remember correctly, it was in the late 90s that John Roberts himself, when he was being considered for the appellate division, he was put on hold. He had to sort of sit on the shelf for a while, along with Judge Merrick Garland, who eventually was confirmed, but he had to wait. So it seems to me that these kind of manipulations have occurred before, but now it just keeps heightening on both sides. It's going to take one party to basically say we have to return to a more of a form of civility and judging the candidate, man or woman, based on their merits and their ability to serve, as opposed to, well, if you're going to opt for that, then we're going to do the same thing, and then nothing gets done.
Well, let me give you a statistic. In the 60 years since Dwight Eisenhower was elected president, members of the Senate used the filibuster to block the confirmation of a presidential nomination a total of 92 times. Mm. Right? Of those 92 times, 72 of them, or 78%, occurred in the first 4 years of Obama's presidency. This was the beginning of a complete abuse and manipulation of Senate power and doctrine. So this is not about one side doing it and the other side doing it. This has been a one-sided campaign since Barack Obama became president that was completely different from anything that had existed before.
But would you prefer, Jeffrey, when all is said and done, that the makeup of the court, should everyone be in good health and survive and not plan on retirement, just remain the way it is with eight as opposed to adding an additional justice on to replace Scalia?
No, I think that the appropriate thing to do in this situation is for the Republicans and Democrats to agree upon a nominee. And I think that's a perfectly possible thing to do. It requires both to compromise. And I think given what was done to the Merrick Garland nomination, that's the right way for our nation, if it cares about operating in a principled manner, to move forward. Instead of allowing the procedures and rules to be manipulated consistently by one party in order to achieve it's their own ideological ends.
All right. Jeffrey Stone, American law professor, noted First Amendment scholar. We're going to see this play out because obviously both sides have dug in for a slugfest.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
You can't start a fire. You can't start.
5:24 on the drive home at 5. Did you see the pompous, arrogant, pretentious governor serving out his final year in office in Trenton? Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, yesterday, as he actually had to, he claimed, conduct a press conference, something that he hated to do in front of assembled members of the press corps. In fact, we're going to be talking to, up next, Paul Molsheim on the refugee situation. We'll get his intake on that. But he was absolutely full of himself. And you would think, show some humility. Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, because you 17% in the polls, the most recent poll. Nobody has been lower other than Governor Brendan Byrne, who scored the same over 40 years ago. Not even Florio Free in 93. Jim Florio scored as low. Not even Jim McGreevy, when he went out as the most corrupt governor of the many corrupt governors in the history of New Jersey, and it had nothing to do with him being a gay American, just he was so hopelessly corrupt right down to the marrow of his bone. He even had a higher acceptability rate. And so you would think that in finally taking questions from the assembled media in New Jersey, there would be a little humility. Think again as he attacked the media, attacked them about their Bridgegate coverage.
I knew about it starting in October after it was reported in the Wall Street Journal. So Mike Duhane calling me on December 12th and saying to me, they knew about a traffic study too. What was that telling me? That they read the newspaper also? I knew about a traffic study in December. You guys were so careless and continue to be through your question about what it means.
Oh, you guys. It's all on the media. The lane closures. So there he was, the killer whale himself, just coming out of the water at Seagate. Anyway, then he went on to say that everyone who had testified in the Bridgegate trial, whether they had already been arrested and indicted, whether they were cooperating, or whether they were brought in as a hostile witness, which means they were favorably disposed to Chris Christie, they all said he knew about the lane closures in the Bridgegate scandal, and yet he claims that they were all liars.
The question, and go back to the transcript, that Angela DeLisanti asked me, which is why I gave the response I gave, was, was anyone on your senior staff involved in this traffic study as an act of retaliation against Mayor Sokolich? The answer was, I've asked all of them, and they've all said no. And by the way, with the exception of David Wildstein's testimony, no one has testified that it was an act of retaliation. Now, the jury believed Mr. Wildstein's story and convicted Mr. Brony and Ms. Kelly, and, you know, that's the way the jury decided. And I can tell you that much of what Mr. Brony said on the stand was a lie, and that almost all of what Ms. Kelly said on the stand was a lie, and I think that's why the jury convicted him.
What a pathological lie. They all lied. They all came together in a cabal to lie against him. Wildstein, who had been his friend from his high school days. Oh, no, he was a liar. He was never my friend, even though they used to share and swap tales as they would bully other people at that same high school campus. And eventually, the whole idea of Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie, putting Wildstein on the Port Authority payroll was to have him bully all of his adversaries and basically to snitch on them. That was his role, and he did it well, and he testified to such. And then when he mentioned Michael Duhaime in that press conference, he came in as a hostile witness. That's a lifelong friend of Shamu El Jefe, Chris Christie. And Michael Duhaime, as much as he was jaundiced, as much as it was painful for him to have to acknowledge, admitted the governor was well aware of the closures of Bridgegate well before they actually transpired. And then the governor kicked in on the election that will take place, two separate primaries, Republican and Democrat, to find the candidates who will end up becoming the next governor in the state of New Jersey.
I guarantee you this much. I've decided I'm not endorsing Phil Murphy, John Wisniewski, or Ray Lesniak. So that I can be pretty clear on. We'll see who else gets into the race on the Republican side, and then we'll make a determination going forward. But
interesting. Mentioned Wisniewski, okay, the assemblyman. He's sort of a supporter of Bernie the Out-the-Cocker Sanders. Mentioned Oh, the state senator Lesniak of Elizabeth. Okay. He had been the mentor of Jim McGreevey when he was the corrupt governor. And then he said he wouldn't support the clone of John Daddy Warbucks Corzine, former Ambassador Murphy, who's just spreading money all over the Garden State in order to secure Democratic votes for the primary. But I noticed he conveniently left out the name of his accuser, Bill Brennan. That was the firefighter, the citizen advocate who took him into Bergen County Court. And I think if you can follow up, Justin, make yourself worthwhile here as producer of the Drive Home at 5 show. When we had Bill on last week, he said there would be a court appearance tomorrow in this case, even though if you checked all the newspapers in New Jersey on Saturday, it made it appear as if this case is over. Well, guess what? Shamu, El Jefe, Chris Christie. It ain't over till it's over. And who said that? Yogi Berra.
The Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa.
On the air, on the app. Curtis Sliwa. Live, local, on it. 77 WABC.
Time 39. It was Saturday. I was walking on the boardwalk in Atlantic City. I was looking up at the white elephant, the rebel, that the sucker taxpayers subsidized its completion to on the commands of Shabu, El Jefe, Chris Christie. Just totally unnecessary, unneeded. The owner now, going back and forth in court, has suggested that he'd like to take those five-star top-shelf rooms and turn them into housing for Syrian refugees. That was not well received at all. But the whole concept of refugees and the executive order that was signed by President Donald Trump on Friday saying, if you're a refugee for the next 120 days, wherever you are, you're going to be sitting on your tuchus before we renew our acceptance program. On the line to discuss it, columnist from the New York Star Ledger, Paul Molsheim. Thanks for joining us back on the Drive Home at 5, Paul.
Hey, thanks for having me.
By the way, whatever happened to that idea of the owner of the Revel wanting to house Syrian refugees in that white elephant?
Well, you know what? There was a story on that today. The Christie administration is denying the guy the gambling license he needs to open as a gambling hall, which is absolutely crazy. Anybody who would open that place up, they should give an award to, you know. And, of course, you know, Christie would, of course, say it wasn't his fault. It's the Casino Control Commission, which blah, 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 blah. But, you know, this state is rudderless. Christie's got a drug addiction, as you know. He's addicted to going to drug clinics and explaining what a wonderful guy he is. He's going to be so nice to addicts. And if only we'll report on that, maybe we'll forget about Bridgegate.
Yeah, well, I saw that press conference yesterday, and he just was blaming you guys, you members of the press. You're responsible for this.
Well, tomorrow that guy Bill Brennan's complaint comes up in Bergen County Court against Christie. And, you know, there's a lot of unanswered questions. In that particular case, he's again saying he thought it was a legit traffic study, right, when he had his big press conference in December of 2013. Well, the night before the press conference, one of his major aides testified that he got very upset when she told him that Bridget Kelly had been sending emails to Wildstein, David Wildstein, the mastermind. Well, if it was a legitimate study, why is an email a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
Christie wouldn't have thought it was a problem unless he knew the study was fake, which, of course, he did. It wasn't a study. They just stopped all the traffic. You don't study anything by stopping the traffic.
You know, one thing, Paul Molsheim, that people seem to agree with Christie, even though he's down in the polls now, 17% acceptability, was when he referred to Trump's rollout of him stopping any refugees from coming in and stopping any travel from seven Muslim-dominated countries as being terrible in terms of the way it was introduced.
Well, you know, my point on that, every time I hear somebody whining about that, I say, why did you support the policies that created the refugees? Why did Chris Christie support, which he did, having a war in Syria? along with Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, the entire Washington establishment, wanted to overthrow the elected government of Syria. That's what caused all these people to flee. If there was no war, you know, prior to the effort by these people, by the neocons and the liberals, to get rid of Assad violently, right? Prior to that, there was no refugee crisis. People in Syria were living in peace. The Muslims weren't killing the Christians. The Christians weren't killing the Muslims. And once that thing got started, it's like any war. Once you start a war, chaos erupts. ISIS took over. It was the biggest debacle. And all my liberal friends wanted to get whining about the refugees. I say, you know, when I was a kid and LBJ was starting the Vietnam War, he's a Democrat, but the Democrats protested, you know. This time, Hillary and Obama started two wars, Libya and Syria. Did you hear a peep out of our liberal friends? And these things have been absolute debacles.
Well, so Paul,
you gotta ask where these refugees came from.
Right, Paul, final question. I noticed Elizabeth Warren was leading protests over the weekend at Logan International Airport in Boston. That's Ballywick. Schumer was crying at JFK. But I noticed Cory Booker was holding his press conference in Reagan Airport in Washington. He didn't even go to Newark International Airport. This guy has an aversion to doing anything in Newark, doesn't he?
Yeah, well, so does everybody else. I hate to say it. I like Newark and all, but it's not exactly a tourist mecca, you know, and he's a tourist, so why should he come there?
I know, but it's just so appropriate. He wasn't in Newark when he was mayor. And he could have conducted that press conference at Newark International Airport. They get a whole load of international passengers and flights. And he chose to stay in Washington.
Yeah, well, he's got, you know, I think he's in the running for 2020 now. He wants to run, so more power to him, you know. He's probably got the inside. I thought he was going to run in 2016. He's got the inside, you know, he's got the inside lane because the black vote in the Democratic Party is huge and monolithic. I mean, Obama got 99%, you know, black vote, and another black guy getting 99%. Number two, guilty white liberals love a guy like Obama or Cory, and you throw the guilty white liberal vote with the black vote, and you cannot lose the Democratic primary.
Oh, and also you forgot, he's going to say, and just like Barack Obama, I got Oprah and her girlfriend, who is my beard, in my corner.
Deep connections, deep understanding.
I admire Curtis Sliwa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Sliwa.
He's a man of the people.
77 WABC.
You're a boy, make a big noise, playing in the street. Gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace.
Oh, and there's mud on the face of Sid Julius Rosenberg. Remember that name, Sid Julius Rosenberg. You hear him on the Imus in the Morning Show, 6 to 9. He is a sports contributor, regular commentary. And then it's he and Bernard McGurk in the BS Show. That's right, because he is a bull feather thrower. And I proved it the other morning on Monday when I was on with Imus in the Morning.
Here's what it comes down to, Imus. I think Curtis believes in his heart of hearts that the reason why he has not been on Psychos twice in the last month is because I've gone to you and said, why would you put Curtis on if, in fact, you've got me here?
I think that is what you did.
Oh, come on.
What are you talking about?
Jesus,
that's exactly what you
see,
did.
Sid, you see, you are un traitor. You are a shanda, that's crazy. Not of the goy.
That is crazy.
No, no, it's true. That's the way you are.
Well, you brought that up on the show when I was with you on your show, the Drive at 5, last week. And what did who did I tell you was to blame for all of this?
You blamed Imus.
Oh, come on.
Did you blame me, Sid, you son of a bitch?
Oh, that's bad.
This is what he said, Imus.
Do you
have tape
of this? Do you have tape
of this? Yes, you said, I am U.S. Now, look, I may be special ed, but I can spell Imus.
That's right, Sid.
I'm going to deny this until he produces the tape.
What do you want, a lawyer? You want Ron Kubi as your lawyer?
If this is all true, produce the tape.
J'accuse you, Sid Julius Rosenberg, because here is the documentary evidence from Thursday night's Drive at 5.
But I'm the last person to stick a shiv in your back. You got the guy that is sticking a shiv in your back. I am U.S.
Oh, so you're putting this one on Imus.
Oh, I'll put it on anybody. I will never, ever be accountable or take the blame, ever.
Never be accountable, never take the blame. Meantime, Imus was luxuriating me in his praise.
So Bernie said he'll be on at 9 this morning, and then my boy Curtis Sliwa, who is really, you know, it's kind of weird. He doesn't, he acts kind of goofy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, intellectually smart.
Yeah.
Where does that come from, Bernie?
It comes from his Polish side.
Right. And it's not Roman Polanski, the pedophile on a pedestal. It's from Pulaski and General Kosciuszko. Because I was the Grand Marshal of the annual Polish Day Parade a bunch of years ago. Meantime, then this announcement was made by Imus about me returning to Psychos tomorrow.
And then on Thursday, Psychos, and one hopes that Sid doesn't lobby not to have Curtis Sliwa on Psychos. But Sid often does. Says, don't put Curtis on.
Right. Yep. Wow.
And that's exactly what he has done. Because he didn't want me to tell the story that I had told Imus. He's cut off all communication, Sid Julius Rosenberg, about the fact that when he was a youngster getting his bris from the moil, the rabbi announced that his name was Sid Julius Rosenberg. The Julius came from his great uncle. That's right. Remember Julius Rosenberg, who was executed at Sing Sing in Old Sparky because he had been tried, convicted, and executed for a conspiracy to commit espionage by helping the Soviet Union get nuclear weapons to use against the United States, along with his wife, Ethel Rosenberg, who was the great aunt by marriage to Sid Rosenberg. And it's interesting, their two sons, who are Sid's cousins, they too have been involved in the revisionism to suggest their father and mother, in fact, were not spies for the KGB. And that's what Sid has been saying on the hush, hush, mush, mush. And then while at Polyprep, the headmaster said, Sidney, you can't have the name of that traitor to America in your middle name, Julius. So he said to his friend, Arthur Idalia, the lawyer, an apologist for the mob, can I use your name? And then all of a sudden he said, hey, and I'll name myself after Ferris Bueller, a guy who stole a car and cut school. So now he calls himself on the WABC bio. That's all you have to do. Go see for yourself Sidney Arthur Ferris Rosenberg, because he is trying to perform revisionism. And late yesterday, he contacted Matt Dahl. And I warned Imus, beware of the Ides of March, March 15th. I am the soothsayer. I have warned Imus not to trust Sid Julius Rosenberg and Matt Dahl. They are the Brutus. They are the Cassius of assassins. And he is trying to do anything to keep me off of the Psycho segment. And apparently, he has succeeded again.